I have worked with scientists and I've worked with engineers in the past that say if we can't see it with our eyes, if we can't measure it with our machines, it doesn't exist. And they've said that to me. So they have said essentially they're not interested in any phenomenon that they cannot see in the visible light spectrum or that they cannot measure with the equipment that we have today. They said that if they can't do one of those two things, it doesn't exist. It's not there. And I asked them a question. I said, think of all of the things that you're missing by limiting your viewpoint, your perspective, to only the things that you can see or measure. What about the other stuff that's out there? And to them, it was of little consequence today. However, less than 100 years ago, at the turn of the century, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, when this tremendous spiritual revolution was sweeping the earth, and we had the great minds that we spoke of earlier, the Michelson-Morley experiment was conducted, and people like Einstein and Niels Bohr, Max Planck, minds like that were working with the electromagnetic spectrum, and they viewed it in many respects in ways differently than we do today. And here's one of those differences. If you, in your mind's eye, if you can consider the graph that we just described, from the long radio waves to the short cosmic and gamma rays and x-rays, think of that as one octave of information, just like on a piano keyboard, from C to C on a keyboard. That's one octave. And if you were to take that one octave and stack another octave on top of it, and then another octave on top of that, each time expanding the entire range by itself one more time and one more time, that would give you some idea of the context of what I'm about to describe. There were scientists and researchers in the early 1900s, late 1800s, such as John Keeley, Nikola Tesla, for example. Some scientists that are not taken quite so seriously today as they were 80 and 100 years ago. They were working with vibrations that were 30 and 40 octaves above where our electromagnetic spectrum leaves us today. 30 and 40 octaves. In other words, if you were to take that spectrum and stack it on top of itself 30 times end to end, or 40 times end to end, they were working with vibrations that were so fast, so highly refined, that Western physics really doesn't even talk about them today. And when they worked with those kinds of vibrations, they achieved effects that to us appeared to be miraculous and poorly understood. By the way, they could never get patents on their equipment. I did a program recently, a very interesting program in the D.C. area. And in the audience, we were fortunate enough to have a gentleman from the U.S. Patent Office who was in our audience. And as I was sharing this part of the story, the gentleman shared with me how the patent process works. And he said two things. He said, first of all, for an inventor to receive a patent on an original piece of work, on an original idea, the patent officer has to be able to replicate or duplicate what the invention is doing. So the patent officer has to make it work. That's number one. And number two, and this is the one that really surprised me, he said the device, the invention, the discovery to receive a patent, the discovery must operate within the confines of accepted science and conventional wisdom. In other words, to you inventors out there, if your device, if your machine, if your invention is working with a form of energy that is not acknowledged in open textbooks and accepted by science today, it will not be granted a patent because it does not fall into the constraints of what is required to receive that patent today. So perhaps this may explain why the work of people like John Keeley and Rife and Reich and Tesla were never patented, because the researchers of the patent office could never duplicate the experiments, number one. Number two, the function was beyond the realm of conventional wisdom. It didn't work. People didn't understand the way it worked. The point to this discussion is our world is made of vibration. We live within vibration, within vibration, within vibration. At the most fundamental level, the vibrations create patterns in what's called the fabric of creation. And those patterns become atoms. Those atoms become the elements and the molecules that become rocks and trees and plants, birds, fish, animals, you and me. We are all, at our most fundamental level, energy in motion, vibration. And I think we all pretty well understand that. Well, the very interesting thing about this is that it is precisely this understanding that everything of our world is vibration that answers our question, what is the quantum hologram made of? It's made of the only thing it could be made of. It is a highly refined vibration that is so subtle. It has escaped detection through conventional wisdom, through conventional electronics, on the one hand. And on the other hand, now that we are delving into the quantum world and our experiments are carrying us into quantum effects, this field of energy is making itself known in ways that to many scientists and researchers are surprising and unexpected. Our world is made of vibration. You and I are vibration. And within that vibration, we are having experiences of thought, feeling, and emotion that are also vibration. Those vibrations interact with one another, and they produce the effects that we call our physical world. Quantum science is beginning to tell us in their language, the ancients said in the words of their time, what that means in our lives. At this time in history, it's very empowering for us to understand that, because there's a sense by many people that our world is out of control, that illness and disease and suffering are out of control. That is a perspective, and there's another perspective that says there is no longer a them and an us. If there is a field of energy that bathes all of creation, we can't talk about them and us. We can't talk about the Al-Qaeda and the Israelis and the Palestinians, and we can't talk about people in Africa and other people, militant groups in our societies, and us. It means there is a we. A we. We are all accessing the same field of consciousness to some degree. We all are participating in the events that are unfolding in our lives. The quantum hologram is the form of vibration that allows everything to be what it is today. Our quantum hologram is the stuff that links us to creation, to the language of creation. It links us to one another. Well, it is precisely these understandings of our quantum hologram that is now leading us into the most ancient understandings of who we are and how we exist in our world. I think it's so interesting. It's so interesting that by going forward with the most sophisticated science in recorded human history, it's carrying us back and inviting us, beckoning to us to understand what the most ancient of our traditions and our ancestors were saying to us in the language of a very another time. So what can we say about our quantum hologram? At the very least, right now we can say that our quantum hologram links us to the events of the world around us. It links us to one another. It links us to the healing of our bodies, to the joy and the sadness and the suffering and the ecstasy of all that we've ever loved and held dear. It links us to the peace between nations. There is a growing body of research suggesting it links us to the weather patterns, as typified by many of the traditions and the dances and the ceremonies of Native and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. There's a growing body of evidence suggesting that there may be 6.2 billion people that walk this earth, and from the perspective of consciousness in the unified field, there's only one of us here. Now we have the opportunity to understand what that kind of connection means and how we may apply this unity, this principle of unity, into the greatest challenges of our time in recorded human history.